Welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. Before I start the interview, if you enjoy this conversation or the others in the archives, please go to iTunes, your favorite podcast site, and leave a review. You'll be directly responsible for the growth of this show. Now then, on with the interview. Hello everyone, and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. Tonight I'm interviewing Caroline Riley Carberry from Austin, Texas. She's a permaculture designer and instructor who's currently teaching permaculture design classes at the Austin Community College. And along with her husband, Michael Carberry, they work and own the Whole Life Learning Center. And Caroline is also responsible for the One World Permaculture Project, which has spent time teaching permaculture in Africa. And they're looking to take their educational experience to India later this year. Additionally, Caroline has studied permaculture with Dick Pierce, Jude Hobbs, and Andrew Millison. How are you doing this evening, Caroline?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Thank you for joining us this evening for this interview. I wanted to talk with you because you've had so much real-world experience with what you've done, taking permaculture to the rest of the world, and also teaching in a formal college setting with the Austin Community College, and then also your work with Michael and teaching children here in the States. And if you'd like to go ahead and give us a little bit of information on your background, what brought you to permaculture, especially teaching it and teaching to children, and then we'll see where things go from there.
Okay, great. I would love to. Yes, I discovered permaculture alongside Montessori education, and I found that they work perfectly together and fell in love with them at the same time, really. So my background is in working with youth. I was living in Colorado at the time, and it's a very beautiful backdrop for studying permaculture design, and lived in Boulder, Colorado, where I did my Montessori training. And, you know, it was one of those things where I looked through the permaculture design principles, and I think of observe, like to observe the children, it's the same thing, you know, in your design process, like a thorough site design, site analysis is definitely your foundation for the design. And it's the same thing in working with youth. And it was just to really start working with youth and sharing permaculture with 6 to 9 year olds, which seems young at first, but you know, they get it. They would always joke, Caroline, this just makes sense. This is the way it is. You know what? This isn't hard. I would laugh and, you know, just be like, yep, exactly, right? This is common knowledge. But it was so much fun to share that passion for sustainable living with kids and really to study permaculture design with them, which was a great way to gain confidence in sharing with more and more people, and then slowly but surely working up to working with adults here. But that was starting about 6 years ago. So it's been a really fun, long road just in learning and learning. And I'm still scratching the surface as far as that goes. But we moved to Austin, I guess, 4 years ago. I did my undergrad here, and it was always home. And so I returned here to work at a Montessori school that was located out on 16 acres of land. And Richard Louv, Last Child in the Woods, the owner of the school, she based her elementary school on that book. She wanted children to go back into nature. And that was the agreement when they hired me. And I remember just being so excited when they asked where I wanted the classroom garden to go, and being able to open up the Montessori curriculum to place-based education and environmental education and all those big buzzwords that were so new. At the time, it felt new to me. I guess I was just discovering it then, but really to be able to dig in, it was a beautiful, beautiful experience. So I remember doing square foot gardening with the kids and created a curriculum around it. Now they have a square foot gardening curriculum, and it makes me smile to think that we were doing that before that existed, and it worked. I mean, the children, like, they got it, and they had their own garden plots, and they knew how many carrots they could put in a square foot, and, you know, they understood companion planting, and they're 7 years old drawing pictures of their garden throughout the seasons, and it was just a wonderful experience. It was beautiful. So here we are. The Whole Life Learning Center is my husband and my school, and we will be sharing permaculture with these kids in the fall. I guess really to get the full story, I should probably go backwards, Colin, start at the beginning of the One World Project. How does that sound?
Wherever you'd like to start that you feel comfortable to tell your story.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. So I'm going to rewind a little bit. I guess this time last year, July, just last year, my husband and I were in Zambia, and I was actually there the summer before that with my mom, and that was my first time to Africa. And the whole time I was there, taking a look around, it was just this, instead of a feeling of sadness because there's so much need there, it was a feeling of like, oh my goodness, there's so many solutions here. Like, I could just, my permaculture design mind was exploding, and I knew that I would come back. I had no idea what was to be created there in the following year. I just felt totally open to returning. And I returned that August and met a young lady. Her name's Alyssa Holloman, and she runs Arise Africa, which is a service project that's also out of Zambia. And she invited me to come back the following year and essentially was like, you know, I hear that you do permaculture design. We need sustainability here. I'm working with a school that works with about 600 youth in essentially a slum in Lusaka, which is the capital of Zambia. And I just took that in and said, okay, well, let's see what comes. And immediately I thought of the children that I teach here in Austin and started writing a curriculum for sharing permaculture with youth. And decided that it would be a beautiful opportunity to really do an in-depth cultural study is the way I saw it. And at the time, it was just called the Zambia Project. And so I started teaching the children, like, you know, going from the bigger picture into the finer details. And so we learned about Africa. We learned about Zambia. We learned about Lusaka. We learned about Matero, which is the community there. And then we finally learned about the Destiny School and the children that go there and their fundamental needs, the ones that are being met and the ones that aren't. And then we started applying the permaculture design principles to the space and really sitting with the ethics and just, you know, care for the earth, care for people and fair share. And what does that mean? And it really was amazing, the conversations we had. And it was a beautiful way for these children to, you know, before we started applying the principles to this community, we touched on often the local community and then also just our physical space, you know. So when we got into sector analysis and the sun and this and that and water, we definitely applied it to our school first. But they really were ready to jump in to the Destiny School. They had no desire to work for themselves. They really wanted to help the community there. And so we started to have conversations about food and and, you know, it's one of those things, like, we've all been hungry. We all know how it feels to be hungry. And I ask that question, you know, like, when you haven't had a snack, are you able to focus in school? And, you know, all of them were like, no, I want to put my head on my desk. I want to take a nap. I want to just lay around. And so, you know, they said, you know, imagine how these kids feel. And they get one meal every other day, and they have no protein source. And so then they asked, like, how can we create protein for them? And we had the conversation, you know, how could we create protein for them? And chickens came up. And the beautiful permaculture illustration, the chicken, I mean, just the inputs and outputs and the multiple functions. And these kids immediately got this. And they knew that that was it. So they decided that the One World Permaculture Project was going to be implementing a chicken coop for this school. And if they could do that, and if they could create a protein source for these children, then who knows where it could go from there. But at least maybe it would help them enjoy school a little bit more. So, you know, with such beautiful innocence, it was just this amazing beginning to a project.
And you worked within the community to find out that that was going to be the project that you were working on to raise the chickens by speaking with the community members and the children?
Yes, we did. I ran that idea by the woman who runs the nonprofit that is in connection with the school. And she said, yes, we would love to implement a chicken coop there. And at that point, I had already agreed to come back in the summer and do a thorough consultation for the school around permaculture and just, you know, really also serving the children there. And that's my passion. So yes, from that point on, the children started designing chicken coops, and then they did final design project for the school itself. And then they ended up doing fundraiser and raised money for the supplies needed to build a chicken coop and supplies needed to buy the chickens themselves and to get the school started off on the feed needed for the chickens, as well as we came up with ideas like we could buy even like a plank of plywood and they could water that to have well there so water isn't an issue. And then it would attract bugs. And so then, you know, they could pull the board up and the chickens could have some extra protein source. So we definitely got into stacking functions there. They wrote letters to the children throughout this process explaining to them what permaculture design is and who they are and wanting to know about the kids in Zambia. And drew pictures of their, you know, I took all the designs and all these letters with me. And Michael and I, we went last July and had the most amazing experience. I mean, you know, of course, the trials and tribulations, for example, Zambia's in the southern hemisphere. So no matter what, to me, the sun is always in the south. Like, that's just, it's natural, you know? And so I flip it. It's like, okay, the sun's coming from the north. We had to design the chicken coop. The two predators that we were designing for were humans and ants. So imagine sitting with that and thinking, okay, you know, there really are no other natural predators there, besides humans and ants. These ants will come through and just annihilate things. So, we decided that we would call the chicken coop the chicken fortress. And we put the perch way up high so that the hens could get up off the ground. So if the ants came through, hopefully they wouldn't get to them. And building in the metric system and attaining materials was, you know, tricky to say the least. We weren't even allowed in the market. We had people come with us. It was a safety issue. And it was one of those things where we just had to be patient. And we were so thankful. We could not have done it without the group of Zambians that were on our team helping us. You know, one thing, like, they would come up and say, okay, you want screws or nails? And say, okay, well, we need both. Let's get these screws. And to us, they're 2 inches long. And to them, they're like, 2 inches, what is that? And then you just point to the one you want, and they run around from stall to stall to stall in the market, just going through all these different boxes and barrels and this and that, looking for hopefully 60 screws. And you take what you get. And it's very different than going to your local hardware store, of course, much different than Home Depot or Lowe's would be. So it was really interesting shopping experience there for sure. And were you going to ask a question?
Well, I'm going to be speaking with Rico Zook here in a couple of days about those cultural differences.
Yeah.
And it seems like one of the big barriers that you ran into, like, once you were on the ground, you had all the information you needed to get started, all the energy was there, and then you run into these social and cultural differences in addition to the language barrier in order to get your project up and running. What was that like, to not be able to go into the market and having to go back and forth and the patience in that kind of a process because of the resources that weren't available? Did you have to adapt a lot in order to make that work?
I am so thankful that I had been there the summer before, because mm-hmm. I was already aware of the fact that it takes 3 times longer to do anything in Zambia than it does in Austin, Texas. And so I definitely prepared for that, and I prepared Michael for that. And it was kind of entertaining to witness his process through it. So that was one thing, as well as the language barrier. We learned, we had four people working with us, and they spoke Nyanja and Bimba, and there's many different languages, but Nyanja is the most prevalent there. And so, and then we had one Zambian who was fluent in English, Nyanja, and Bimba. And so we, you know, it took a really, really long time. And one thing we had to completely release was our expectation of the outcome of what the coop would look like. All we knew is that we were committed to finishing it by the time we left. And we had 10 solid days of working there. And, you know, it barely came together. We definitely worked on Saturday, and they wouldn't allow us to work on Sunday because they have church there, the whole church service there on Sunday, and they invited us to go to church with them, which was a whole other amazing cultural experience, just to go to church. It was amazing, really. It was beautiful. So, yeah, there was no working on Sunday, and it was really hard not to, because we knew we had so much to do that, you know, we walked out of the church that was in the school building, and there is our coop, and it's halfway done, and all we wanted to do was get going. Another thing is electrical tools with British plugs, Japanese plugs, and American stuff. It was nuts. We shorted out a gajillion times. It's funny. Like, it's really entertaining. You just have to laugh with it, because otherwise it's pure frustration, and that doesn't get you anywhere. And of course the children were around us the whole time, and just being surrounded by 600 children, it's really great perspective. It keeps everything in perspective. And it was, you know, they're amazing help, very curious, also wanting to practice their English. English is the academic language there, but they're studying it in school. And meanwhile, I'm also going around to the classes and sharing with them our project and telling them about our children and sharing with them just the joy that the children had in designing this coop. And, you know, just this was a gift from our community to theirs. And I wanted to let them know that it was theirs, not ours. And so it really worked out. It's amazing how it worked out. The coop is by no means beautiful. And then, you know, just the whole thing of service. And I've learned a lot about just really, is it sustainable? Like how to create something that is sustainable for the community that doesn't require the outside help, like constantly. And it's something that this project taught me a lot about, but we did not master it. I know that it requires donations for the chicken feed. We ended up getting 32 hens, and it's enough for each child to have one egg a week, which when you think about it, as Americans, it sounds like nothing, but it is something. And I've heard that it's going well. But yeah, it's really, there's a fine line in international aid work. And like my naive self, of course, it feels good to help. And so it was just as much for myself as it was for them. I mean, I would be dishonest to say it was only for the Zambians, because it wasn't. It felt good to my heart to help these people. And I fell in love with the community. You know, a part of me is still with them. So that's for myself just as much as it's for them. And I know that we won't be going back to serve them anymore, and that's tricky. But I also know that what we did definitely made an impact, because when we brought it back to the kids and gifted them the letters that the children in Zambia wrote to them, I know that they, a part of them, it is not just an academic knowing of Africa, you know, they know Zambia, they know Lusaka, they know these children at the school, because they wrote letters to them and they received letters back, and I've seen pictures, and so far away yet so close. It was amazing. It was really amazing. Also just to see like my children giving me their allowance, and I'd be like, no, I cannot take this. And then they got the okay from their parents. Like, no, they want to give their allowance to help build this chicken coop for these children. And we're okay with it. Please. Like, if that's, you know, this is their choice. And how empowering is that? It's just beautiful. It was an amazing experience. So I'm really excited to get to do it again this year, with a different community where the relationship is a little bit more established. So the goal is a little bit different. It will be, hopefully we won't be implementing anything to the community there. I'll be doing a site analysis, and it'll be more along the, I guess, care for the people, really. It's definitely going to be about community building. It's a school in India where I'll be going. And I'll be looking to create lasting relationships between our children at the Whole Life Learning School and the children at the Bhatti Mind School. And through this service community in Austin called the Amala Foundation. And we are also active community members there. And so I know that we can create lasting communications. And I think that that will be amazing enrichment for both schools.
Is communication one of the reasons why you won't be returning to Africa to continue with the Chicken Coop project? Or was that a kind of a once and done, and now you're looking for a long-term project from here?
That is a really good question. I believe that there's a handful of reasons. Definitely communication is the, yes, I can say communication. And, yes, I think that's the main reason. I think that I really set with wanting to create something that was a little more sustainable, as in like long term. And I know that the chicken coop there is sustainable for them, and I know it's long term. And, I feel as though the project is complete, and the community itself, the Arise Africa, is an amazing organization. And they are helping folks, and they're helping children in Zambia. And so our vision is aligned in that way. And but really it's a different community. And I think that that's why we're changing to this focus this year, is because I feel as though there's even more alignment, because it's our adult community, our youth community, as well as this project. I trust that the support will be there fully.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you'll be building a long-term relationship between your Whole Life Learning Center and the school in India, so that you can have an ongoing project between the two organizations and continue that communication and build the relationships between the children in both places, so that you have a cultural exchange.
Exactly.
Through permaculture.
Yes, through permaculture. And, you know, the way I see it is, I would love to get into a more, like, I would just say, like, the yield could possibly be a design for the school, and, you know, those kind of things like gardens and gray water and all those things that we think of when we think of permaculture design. And right now, like, yield I'm focusing on is connecting community and just that, you know, the beauty in that. So I feel as though with this project in India, it could go further with an actual site design and implementation, which is really exciting to think about through working with this youth, because this is it's a community school for a village there. And I'm really looking forward to teaching the youth at the school about permaculture, and hopefully something will spark through that. So it's a baby right now. It is definitely the seed, and I'm tending it, and it is sprouting as we speak right now. So maybe it's a to be continued.
As you still put together your plan and put together your vision, once you're on the ground and get to observe what you have to work with and interact with people who will be part of that community, then you can develop it and grow it some more.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Beyond your trip to India, what do you see as your next steps for the One World Permaculture Project, or is that your main focus right now?
Well, I teach permaculture design at the Austin Community College here, and that amazing position just came out of working with youth, and it's so much fun working with adults. I joke with my students, it's the first class, I say, you know, my foundation is in working with youth, but I know that you guys can read and you can write and you can do math and you can basically organize yourselves. And the things that we accomplish in 4 hours once a week blows my mind. And so, you know, I'm so thankful that I'm so patient from working with kids. And I feel like facilitating adults is candy. I mean, it is such candy, and I'm loving it. So One World Permaculture has also turned into our home. We've been dubbing it the One World Permaculture Center. We have about a half an acre in the city in Austin. And we're, you know, we have 6 chickens. We had 7, but the foxes took one last week. And I have a beehive and two cats who we love. And we're looking forward. We're hopefully about to get some ducks. And we have amazing gardens. And so I've been teaching out of my home, which is amazing. And this next class, through ACC, I'll get to host at my house as well as at the community college campus, where we have a big garden and greenhouse and, you know, some outdoor teaching space, which is great. But my class is only one night a week. And so whatever we implement, it doesn't necessarily get tended to like it could. Mm-hmm. And when we do stuff at my home, it's being cared for, and so it flourishes. And that's really what I want my students. I want to set them up for success. And so I also love teaching through hands-on. I'm all about experiential education. And so to be able to teach out of my home and have the space to do it, we have an opportunity to do like half the class is hands-on, and then the other half of the class is lecture and an activity. And so I say, you know, if you like to learn through play, please take my class. And I've been attracting those playful adults. And so it's also been amazing community building. And I just started offering this class last fall. And so I have the whole PDC broken into 2 sections. And so it's, you know, it's 4 hours every Wednesday. And so that's 18 classes total. And so by the time we get through it, we really know each other. And we have a potluck, local food potluck dinner, because since it's from 5 to 9 at night, you have to eat. And so we're practicing, you know, it's just permaculture through practice, and it is so much fun. And so I'm working on building that curriculum, and then the whole process of, you know, doing internships so that I can really be able to offer PDCs. And my mentor, Dick Pierce, he co-signs my certificates with me. And so it's the whole process of all of it. It's really amazing. I've grown so much through this. So yeah, being able to work with people ages 6 and up is just, it's wild. So my ACC class is going really well, and One World Permaculture through my consulting business, it's really education consulting and design. Mm-hmm. And, I have a client that I've discovered that when it comes to implementation, is when I turn it into an educational process, I love it. Otherwise, I haven't been finding the joy in it. So did I anticipate it really? And so we implemented keyhole beds, which are, you know, the raised keyhole gardens. The design came out of Africa, and it's a drought-resistant gardening, which and often we need because we're in a horrific drought, and we still want to grow our food. And so wicking beds are huge down here right now, and these raised keyhole gardens are work really well. However, people don't really know what they are. So we hosted a workshop, and 15 people showed up, and we implemented these beautiful beds for a client. And in turn, he donated money to the Amala Foundation for one teenager to go to summer camp this summer, which is amazing. And who knows what will be birthed through this child, this teenager's experience at summer camp. It's for refugees in town. And so just to be able to turn my business, even like implementing for a client into service, it fuels me. That was one of my favorite days this spring, was implementing those gardens and just knowing that, yes, this is still a One World Permaculture project. Being able to keep it local feels so good, whether it's in Austin or India or Zambia. Yes, so there's a lot of classes and a lot of workshops. Austin has so much to offer right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's ripe in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, there's a book that I'm trying to remember the title of that a group of, I believe it was a group of permaculturists in Austin wrote 2 or 3 years ago that they got a grant for to.
Is the Rhizome Collective.
That's who I was thinking of.
Sustainability, is that the book?
That's, I believe that's it, yes.
You know, I believe that, I know that I was in Colorado when the Rhizome Collective was really at their height, and I know that the family, I can't remember their names right now, but I know that they moved up to Ithaca to be a part of a Sudbury school community. And then I've heard that they're starting up some more stuff, but, you know, we just have a beautiful community of people here. And the city itself is so supportive. They want the city to be green. Like in this drought, there's been so much awareness raised around just water, you know, and so now the city has, passed a legislature that we can do gray water. And the reason they did it is because they were aware of the fact that people were doing it illegally. They were just like, you know, people are doing this anyway, and they're putting their washing machines out into their yard. This is where the water needs to go. Let's at least support them to do it the right way. Which is exciting to know that the people are being heard in that way,
mm-hmm.
and that the city itself is paying attention to the climate and change and golly, like, thank God for evolution in that way. So it's great.
So you're finding that not only is your community of permaculture and of permaculturists and sustainable living coming together, but also that the political system and the local legislature, everything's starting to come together and make a lot of these processes that you're implementing easier?
Yes, I do believe so. And, you know, I'm really... We have a, it's kind of interesting to think that, you know, my husband and I, we have a private school, so we're not teaching within that system. But I know that their Sustainable Food Center is a organization in town who has an amazing group of people who are going into public schools, implementing gardens. They also have a program where you sign up and your agreement is that you will let them know how your garden is going, and they give you free organic seeds and free compost, which is awesome. And they teach classes on, you know, gardening in the city, which is great. And then we have the Permaculture Guild, which is who I'm working with, and as well as who teach permaculture design courses other than my class at ACC. And then there's all these it's movement, like it's community movement, people that, you know, they want to grow their own food. They want to create a community of like-minded people. They want to support local businesses, even like creating, you know, just that alternative currency just through trade and just taking all of that, taking money out of the equation. How beautiful. You know, you come help me build a wicking bed and I will help you build a wicking bed at your house next week. And then we can share food when it's time to harvest. It's pretty amazing. And it seems like it all congregates this time of year around Barton Springs, which is our spring-fed pool. It's 68 degrees year-round. So if you ever come to Austin and you want to know what's going on, go to Barton Springs and sit around, and slowly but surely you'll hear conversations coming up that you're always welcome to join, which is like all around the latest movements in town. It's entertaining and really fun. So,
what I imagine with how hot it can get in Austin, that any place with a naturally fed pool that's going to be that cool would be a place for people to show up to.
Definitely. So yeah, and you know, there's so many amazing opportunities. Just thinking about right now, it's summertime, and there's still things happening. But for Michael and I, summer is kind of our off season since we're on the school schedule, and so we take time to travel, which is a great time to go out into the community at large and continue like in that depth of study. And so we just got back from Oregon, and where we did an advanced permaculture training and guiding youth, and it was really beautiful experience to reconnect with Oregon, one of my favorite states, and just the place of abundant water as well as the community up there. And it was an amazing experience to apply permaculture to education.
And who taught that course?
It was oh goodness. So Matt Bibiu and Kelly, I am totally spacing on her last name right now, but I love them so much. And Patty from Santa Fe. So there was three of them. As I'm digging through my notebook, like, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry, Kelly and Patty and Matt, if you hear this, I'm sorry that I forgot your last name.
It's okay. But I can look them up and see if I can backfill.
Okay, I appreciate
that. Okay.
It was through Mother Earth School, which is a great school down there. It's a primary school, so it's been kindergarten and preschool, and then this year they're starting in first and second grade. And you know, really for Michael and I, it was really affirming to have a week like surrounded by educators, and to know that there are so many of us who are committed to sharing this message with youth, and we all really shared the same vision that, you know, teaching adults permaculture design is a band-aid. It's like we've forgotten these things that people used to know and practice. And by sharing this with youth, maybe someday there won't be a need for adult permaculture design classes, because it'll just be integrated into the way we live. And that's really the vision that all of us were carrying. Like, okay, let's share this with youth and imagine what could happen from there. So I imagine all my kiddos someday having their permaculture design certificates, you know, these things that we place so much importance on or have so much pride around, because I love the experience. And for them, who knows, the age of 12, they have that. And then they're ready to teach by the age of 15, 17. And it's just amazing to think, like, what will these kids be doing when they're 25 even? I can't imagine. So it's really exciting. And the training was just beautiful. And we brought the information back, just really the momentum back to our community, and are really looking forward to just creating our small school, just holding that space here in Austin for our community. So look forward to it growing and flourishing in that way.
You sound so full of hope and happiness and just full of energy for the projects that you're working on and the future as it presents itself. That's very refreshing to hear, with everything else going on in the world and everything else in life, to know that you found something that so inspires you so much and carries through in your voice and your words and the work that you're doing. Thank you for being out there, Caroline. It's nice to know you're there doing all this.
Thank you, Scott. Yes, making the least change for the greatest effect, that's definitely what we're doing here. So it's just by sharing little tidbits and planting those seeds and letting them grow. So I feel confident in knowing what the future will hold, and that there's a lot to look forward to.
Indeed there is. And I really thank you for taking the time to join me for this interview and to catch up a little since I saw you last in Oregon. Before I bring this to a close, is there anything else that you'd like to add to the conversation or say to the listeners?
I want to say thank you so much for this opportunity to share. And for all you guys listening out there, just thank you for doing what you're doing and keep practicing permaculture and, you know, like one foot in front of the other. But yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Caroline. Good night to you and Michael. Have a great evening there in Texas.
Great. Thank you. You too.
Thank you for joining me for another interview. If you have comments or questions about this or any other episode, go to thepermaculturepodcast.com and leave a message or send me an email. That address is show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. Until the next time, take care of yourself, the earth, and each other.